So, as part of our getting fantastic people into the studio, I was very delighted to welcome Steve Hackett from Genesis into the studio a couple of weeks ago, and this is how it went.
Steve, you've just come off a major, well, you're still halfway through your tour. You've just toured Europe.
Yep.
What's this, a little 6 weeks or sort of break before you start again?
Yeah, well, pretty much. It's been 3 months, pretty much, of continuous touring, and so I'm back to recording now. I don't really have a break as such. So I'm kind of behind my tour, my recording schedule, because my touring schedule has become so extensive in recent times, and I don't want to become entirely archival with this nostalgic stuff I'm doing at the moment. So I'm on to new, past as new. Well, I'm back in the studio today.
I'm very glad to hear it. We'll come on to that in just a moment. The last time I saw you live was Nebworth, 1976.
Is it really?
And you don't remember me. Unbelievable. Those were. Looking back on those days, does that seem a completely different era to you?
It was a different era. Different times, but essentially the music is still there. Technologies have changed. But audiences have been very faithful and thank God they're still there.
It would be fair to say that you really created Genesis' successful sound when you joined for the Nursery Crime album, didn't you?
That's November, right, 71. Yeah, 71, yeah.
And, yep. I mean, one of my favourite albums, Selling England by the Pound, just wonderful stuff. And you were very, very, using a strange word, instrumental in creating that sound. Did you feel that at the time?
Well, I did. At times, what I used to think was my role with Genesis when I first joined them was, as well as to be the guitarist, was to perhaps try and be critical and try and expand the arsenal of effects and improve the stage presentation. I'd been hugely influenced by seeing King Crimson and Pete Sinfield's role with them, which was to be a part of the band, but not to be a part of the band, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the fact that he was the guy who mixed the sound, did the lights, did the lyrics. But I could see that he was doing much more than that, mentoring people and trying to shape the thing. So I thought, you know, when you're in the thick of it, you can't see the wood for the trees. And I thought, it would be lovely if this band gets hold of a Mellotron. And, you know, I'd seen the Moody Blues of the Mellotron, I'd seen King Crimson, and I thought, you know, well, this will make you sound like an orchestra. And then about a year or so after we got that, they started to do voice tapes, and you could also sound like a choir. So by the time we were doing Selling England, which you mentioned, Dancing with the Moonlit Night, like, when those voices kick in, it's an important part of the sound, isn't it? Suddenly, in the
absolutely.
Middle of a rock thing, Mozart arrives, and it's, you know.
And then you went on from there to The Lamb Lies Down. Now, Peter's written and spoken a lot about The Lamb Lies Down, because at the time he was having difficulty with his personal life, wasn't he?
Yes.
And also, I think the rest of the band felt a little bit that Peter had maybe dominated the creation of that album. Was that fair to say?
I think that part of the price of retaining Pete as a vocalist was to accept the fact that he wanted to write the story for the album and wanted to write all his own lyrics for the first time. And it was looking touch and go whether he was going to stay or not. You know, some days he was in the band, some days he wasn't. I respect that entirely. At the time, it made things difficult, but I respect the fact that, you know, he's a man. You couldn't criticize his integrity. Mm-hmm. And I know that he felt that he wanted to move the sound on. He wanted to do an album that was lyrically intensive. He didn't want to sing other people's lyrics. And I understand that. You know, he wanted to live the songs, wanted to believe them. So that was fine. But, of course, at the end of that album, we were without a vocalist after we toured it
absolutely
throughout the world.
And then you took that amazing decision to record A Trick of the Tail, and that album could have so badly gone wrong. You know, No Gabriel.
Yeah.
And the critics were ready to pounce, but you just all did a superb job. It was a brilliant, brilliant album.
I think it was a very interesting time for the band. I'd just done a solo album, and it was actually Mike and Phil who'd been the rhythm section on that and had been very encouraging.
Mm.
And Tony Smith, the manager. And that had done well, and I thought, you know, if I can do that on my own, imagine how a Genesis album is going to go.
Yeah.
So I knew by the time it came to the release of Trick of the Tail, I knew that the band was going to do well. I think there were others in the band who were more nervous than me, but I knew that Phil was going to do great on stage because he had a great voice.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
And a great drummer as well.
I
didn't realise, I've been reading about your frustration, though, when you moved on to Wind and Wuthering. I didn't realise you'd had so much input on Blood on the Rooftops, which personally is my favourite song on the album, actually.
Ah, yeah. Well, that one's largely my baby. I was trying to come up with something that was quintessentially English, but at the same time, I wanted it to be surreal. So I thought the best thing is, you know, Phil came up with the title, Blood on the Rooftops, and he's talking about a TV... prison breakout and prisoners airing their grievances on the rooftops, holding up sheets.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, couldn't the whole of the lyric, in fact, be a little like channel surfing?
Yeah. We always watch the Queen on Christmas Day. Lovely.
Yeah, that's it. So all the levels of action happen on the TV. It's all remote viewing, the whole thing. So, yeah, I think in some ways it's a little bit close to some of the Floyd lyrics, in a way, the sort of disaffected...
There's almost a mirror history between the two bands, isn't there?
I think a little bit, yeah, and I think that in the early days, I think Genesis invested more heavily in atmosphere, I think. I do believe that Pink Floyd were less a singles band, though, subsequently, and they were firmly albums and stage show orientated. But I think that there was a parallel, musically very different. I think that there's more of a blues bass to Floyd.
Right, yeah.
And whereas, you know, so the European harmonies, lots of... I like to think of it as Russian influence that crept in.
You took the decision to leave. You bought your first solo album out, Voyage and Acolyte, which was very successful. And it could be so easy of not being successful, couldn't it? Because a lot of people leave bands and their first solo albums flops, but yours didn't. You must have been very pleased with that.
I was very pleased with that. There was an audience for what I was doing. I had help from the guys in the band, which made a difference, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was to work with other people. I was to work with the late, great Richie Havens, Randy Crawford. First thing she had released in this country was... on my second thing, Please Don't Touch. I got a chance to work with some great vocalists, and then after that I formed my own band for the first time, and then I was touring under my own name. But that was a great band. The guys in it were terrific.
Let's bring you up to modern day.
Sure.
You're now touring as Genesis Revisited 2.
Yes.
So that period of your life must have been very important for you, and musically to want to redo this. Are you putting a new angle on it, or is it a duplication, or what?
Well, I'm trying to be authentic to the original versions, but at the same time, I want to be able to take it to the mountains, for instance, at the end of Supper's Ready, which I do every night. At the end of it, I do a really extended thing. Having done, you know, the set phrases that are on the original, then I go off the map and improvise, and sometimes go on for 2 or 3 minutes doing that, because I don't want the song to end, and I get the feeling that the crowd don't want it to end either.
Well,
it's an important part of...
It's your
magnum
opus,
lives.
Isn't it? It's your magnum opus.
It is really for the early band, yeah.
And I think it's probably the only, apart from American Pie, it's the only song I know the lyrics to the whole thing, and it's, you know, what, 23 minutes long or something like that, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's
yeah.
an incredible
yeah. Yeah.
piece of opera, really. It's just wonderful. You've been at the Royal Albert Hall, which must have been a wonderful experience, isn't
yes,
you?
It?
And
was.
You're releasing a DVD and a CD of the event, which comes out soon, I believe.
That's right. It's out any day now, and there's a Blu-ray version of that as well. So we try and address all formats, other than 78. But there you are. It's I'm sure there'll be a return to shellac at some point.
It's going that way, isn't it?
It is going that way. Yeah, for sure.
One question I asked Ian Anderson, Jethro Tull, this the other day. Tribute bands, yeah. Are you heavily in favour of them, or do you just sort of turn a blind eye? Do you join in with them, or what?
Because
there's some good ones around. There are some good ones around.
There are, yeah. I think that anything that keeps the music alive is a good thing. So in doing my version of it, I'm wearing, you know, my curator's hat in a museum of my own making, really. So I'm very happy to parade those exhibits. Very proud for others to do the same. We can't knock the tribute acts. I think, but you know, the original authors of the stuff doing it, I think there is a difference. They're obviously going to take the bull by the horns in a different kind of way and not produce quite so faithfully, but try and remain authentic. But to feel you can tweak it, you can extend it, you can add an orchestra, you can have a choir, you can have guests come, mm-hmm. come and go. There's so many ways to present that. You can segue things. You can order the songs any way you like to. So what I find is choosing the best songs, which are already chosen by the audience, for God's sake. You know what things that they're going to like. There's no point doing something they don't like.
Absolutely.
So it's a huge crowd pleaser. But I think tribute bands play an important part. And I have jammed on one or two things in the past. You know, come and do a walk on, do First and Fifth. I've done that with people. But if I get to represent something like Watch of the Skies myself, you know, it's important that we take people on a science fiction ride and create a star field and a trip through space visually with it, with either the LED screens or with lights and various tricks. So I want them to be able to travel and journey with the music.
Mm. You're off to Italy in July, and then you're back here the last part of October on your Ipswich, Brighton, Southend. I shall be coming to see you in Southend. Last question, really, and I'm sure I'm sick to death of answering this. I was on an aircraft. I actually managed to sit next to Mike Rutherford going to Spain last year. And the obvious question are, you know, will you ever, you know, for charity or whatever reason, could you ever see all of you back together again? And I mean Gabriel, Banks, Rutherford, all of you back together for one event, maybe?
It's entirely possible. You've just got to be very patient with this sort of thing. The fact that I'm doing a Genesis show has spoken loud and clear to all the others that I'm at the forefront of wanting to do that, but it does require everyone's cooperation. Obviously, there are many different versions and incarnations of Genesis, and it's a case of which one you got on board for, whether it was the I Can't Dance aspect or the, you know, the Water of the Skies Supper's Ready aspect. You know, it's a band that morphed through many, many eras.
And there's also some question with Phil's health. But apparently he's made some sort of recovery, and he was looking to tour again. So the rumour mill has it. I don't know. Are you still in touch with everybody?
I saw them a few weeks ago. In fact, before I was off on tour. Mm-hmm. He was saying that he was proud of the fact that he felt he could now play some of the songs again.
Oh, brilliant.
I don't know how it's gone since, and endurance is another matter, but I'm rooting for him, let's face it.
Absolutely.
I want to be positive as one can, you know. He's a lovely guy, great talent.
I saw him in his Brand X era. I saw him live at the Chalk Farm many years ago. That was just a wonderful evening. My only regret, I never saw more of Genesis. I saw you about four or five times live.
Right.
But it was just wonderful. Stephen, it's an absolute personal honour to talk
Thank
to you today.
Thank you. Well,
and I will come and see you in Southend, and hopefully maybe we can have a chat nearer the time on that one. Your new DVD comes out very, very soon. And Hackett Songs is your official website. If
That's
people want
the one,
to
yes. One. Yes, indeed.
And I know you're a very, very busy man. Enjoy Italy. It should be fabulous. And Steve, thank you very much, Simon.
Thank you, Mike. All the best.
Thank you very much, Steve. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Wow, you heard it there first. There is a reunion on the cards, possibly. Since that interview with Steve, it's emerged as a major new BBC documentary about the band as well, with them all interviewed, etc. So we look forward to that. Let's just play out of that piece with a little bit of Mad Mad Moon.